This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervy. I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And Carrie Kasem is here with me. Doesn't look like she's ready to manage anyone's life
no,
right now.
No, not at all. I literally had no idea we started. My boyfriend here sitting to the side of me. Yeah, you just started. Literally, it shook me.
Oh, what a shock. We're on the air. What a shock. I'm telling you,
Lord.
Carrie.
Man.
You got to focus. Like this morning, I was focused. I had my first father and son baseball game. It was the fathers versus the sons, the coaches actually versus the kids. So
it's so completely unfair.
Actually, you know, I was a little disappointed in myself.
What happened?
I got super competitive all of a sudden. When I got up to bat, I just wanted to slam that ball. Their little 6-year-old standing out there, and I was just swinging for the fences. What is with me?
Did they make you bat on the other side, like with the other arm or something? Do they make it unfair somehow?
Well, no.
I mean, I was just going for fun.
And I don't know. I was trying to prove to people. I don't know what I was trying to prove, but you know, I used to play a lot of baseball. I had a tryout for the Cincinnati Reds way back when, and I think people just see me as some coach that doesn't know anything about baseball. So I wanted to show that I could play.
And that's the perfect venue.
Exactly. You know, it was the resume. I wanted to show the resume that, you know, people would say, wow, you play ball.
You know, you could get a shirt made up with like all your stats.
The resume.
On the back.
I should. Yeah. You know, I want to talk about our first guest because he has, what a resume this guy has. There's so much going on him. He should have a shirt made up, Carrie, and maybe you can do it for him.
I'll help him.
With all his accolades. He's a television and radio host, newspaper columnist, author, and lawyer. Of course, the Michael Smirkanish program on POTUS, Sirius XM 124, every day at 9 in the morning Eastern Time. He's the host of CNN Smirkanish, again, 9 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays. Former, longtime newspaper columnist for Philadelphia Inquirer, Sunday morning newspaper, of counsel for Klein and Spector in Philadelphia. He's been a guest on so many shows, The View, Real Time with Bill Maher, Today Show, and a host of others. No pun intended, Carrie.
No,
you're looking
at
me like I'm crazy. He's interviewed 5 U.S. presidents, all living U.S. presidents, and of course was the first one to interview President Obama, first radio host to interview him live from the White House, authored 7 books. His most recent, Clowns to the Left of Me, Jokers to the Right, American Life in Column. That's his theme song if you listen to his POTUS show. Got great reviews for that book, his 7th book. Welcome to Gervy's Law, Michael Smirkanish.
I'm exhausted just listening to that introduction. My God.
Isn't that amazing? You've never been introduced like that. You're usually introducing all these people. And here you go, sitting back and listening to all of these accolades. Michael, what is the most meaningful thing that I just said?
Geez, I'm not sure. I guess maybe you could have added a wedding anniversary tomorrow of 25 years, and then I'd be done.
Oh, congratulations.
That's wonderful. And 4 kids amongst that through the 25 years.
It's true. Yeah, it's
now,
true.
That's something to be proud of.
One of whom is on the West Coast, so it's nice to be with you both.
You're on the West Coast?
Or one of them,
one of
his kids.
One of our kids is.
Well,
yeah.
Who's on the West Coast? Why aren't they here in studio with us here?
They should be.
Alan, you'd be much more entertained with him than you would with me.
But it's interesting because I'm talking about the father and son baseball game. We could have had him here and we could have had father and son talking about the show and talking about you.
It brings back memories. Just unfortunately, mine are all beyond that age, but I wish I could turn the clock back.
Oh, no, you don't. You don't.
Look at, I really do.
Wait a sec. You want to be a Republican again? In 2010, you made the switch, and you want to turn the clock back.
Not unless President George Herbert Walker Bush is back in office. then it would be okay with me.
Then it's okay. Well, or another Republican, possibly.
And you met Reagan as well.
I had extraordinary political experiences at an early age. I was a newly minted Republican in the spring of 1980, and so it was just the outset of those go-go Reagan years, and that's when I came of age. I got wrapped up in all of it, and the broadcast career that I've created for myself really grew out of having unique political experiences back when I had hair.
And for those of you who know, you can go on our Facebook page and see Michael. If you haven't seen him, he doesn't have hair, but he's really great looking. My wife was saying,
I can Photoshop it.
You can Photoshop hair.
I can just
hair.
Put some hair on him. Yeah, easy.
I don't think that's important. I think it's more important, the substance. And I want to ask you, Michael, you practiced law, and this is a legal show, of course, for 10 years with the great James Beasley. He's a very well-known, legendary Philadelphia trial lawyer. What did you learn from Mr. Beasley in practicing law?
Well, I have to tell you just one bit of background about that if I were speaking to folks in any other part of the country, I would skip. But at the L.A. Times, you have Steve Lopez as a columnist.
Right.
He used to be at the Philadelphia Inquirer. And way back when, I was 29 and an appointee of the President Bush administration, where my job was running all public housing in the Department of Housing and Urban Development in 5 states and Washington, D.C. And Lopez wrote something very unflattering about me and the Philadelphia Inquirer, and I consulted legal counsel James Beasley, who was a legendary Philadelphia-based trial attorney.
Yeah.
Long story short, Beasley accepted my case, but we never filed it. George Herbert Walker Bush lost the 92 election to Bill Clinton because I was a presidential appointee. I was then soon to be out of a job. I went to work for Beasley. So, but for Lopez writing something with which I vehemently disagreed, I wouldn't have had a great legal career with a legendary trial lawyer.
What an amazing story.
Isn't that a great story?
Yeah.
I mean, how many people can say that? I represent a lot of people, and I've never hired any of them. You must have said something right, Michael.
Well, I guess it just goes to show you that there's always a silver lining, right?
Yeah, that's one way to put it. You know, you say there's always a silver lining, but then you say that you don't want to be associated with the thought processes of either one of the main parties in this country. Where's the silver lining there?
Well, look, I'm among the 40%+ who do not identify as a Republican or a Democrat. We are the largest voting bloc in this country. Now, I recognize that a lot of people who are in that category are probably leaners, or maybe they're liars. But even if you discount the numbers significantly, there are many who are disaffected with the two-party choices. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a yearning in this country for a movement of third-party candidates. I was heartened by the fact that Michael Bloomberg maybe threw his hat into the ring, at least put his toe into the water. When I saw the headline, I was excited. I was just landing on a flight when that news broke, and I had to read into the story to realize, oh, no, he's running as a Democratic candidate if he runs. But my point is that someone like Bloomberg, I think it's out there for the asking.
But you talk about it being very difficult for an independent to win, notwithstanding the fact that on your show on CNN this weekend, you talked about 43% of people identifying as independent. What's going on there? How come you can't run as an independent? Apparently, not a lot of people are happy with either party, but you can't win as an independent, like a guy like Bloomberg?
Well, the deck is stacked against you, Alan, if you want to run as a third-party candidate. From the outset, states like mine are not like yours. You now have the jungle primary in California, but a state like mine, you've got to run as either a Republican or a Democrat, and people who are not registered in either of those parties, they can't participate in the decision-making. And, you know, that mindset carries all the way through until you get to the presidential debates, where if you don't have a showing of 15%, you're not going to get on that stage. So all along the way, there are impediments that have been erected by the two major parties to try and keep everybody else out.
I mean, we are a republic. This isn't supposed to be a two-party country. And the fact that these if you want to get anybody up on that stage, the 15%, this is ridiculous. There needs to be some kind of reform. Has there been any kind of movement towards that?
There have been efforts in the past, but nothing has really been able to harness the energy that I think is out there. In the last cycle, Carrie, you know, we had two-term Republican governors of blue states, Johnson and Weld. Maybe that ticket should have been reversed. Gary Johnson had a tough moment one particular day on MSNBC, and the media jumped all over him. The same media that ignored the existence of the Libertarian ticket all of a sudden took interest when there was something to complain about. But I still maintain, I mean, I base this anecdotally on people that I interact with through my radio program or my speaking engagements, but also through the political science, that there's just a whole host of us who are not happy. There was an 8,000-person survey last year called Hidden Tribes, and what it revealed is that you've got 8% hardcore on the left, 6% hardcore on the right, and a hell of a lot of us in between who are the disaffected silent majority.
Now, what about the schools that seem to be all liberal? I mean, do you think they have any? Should they not be teaching both sides of it and all sides of it?
You mean, it's interesting because as I was waiting to come on Gervie's Law, I heard a report about Don Jr. having a speaking gig at UCLA. I think it was just today. I had Adam Carolla on my CNN program yesterday, and we were talking about he has a new movie by the title of Unsafe Spaces.
No Safe Spaces, Michael.
No Safe Spaces.
We had Dennis Prager on a couple of weeks ago or a month ago, and he talked about that. And you had Adam on talking about it.
Well, and the takeaway is that what used to be this bastion of free speech, college campuses, is now home to some speech but not all speech.
Right.
I don't think that's healthy.
Yeah. And I think that's what the problem is with our generation, the new generation, you know, getting in there in the political scene. You're dealing with people that are coming out of universities that are very left.
Let me ask you this, Michael, because we have to take a quick break. But on this line of thinking, you have been quoted as saying, if you're only going to get your news and information from one outlet or one grouping of outlets and make judgments based on it, that's going to have consequences for this country, and they're not going to be good. Would you extrapolate that to Carrie's question with respect to schools as well?
Absolutely. Look, I am all about changing the channel, except from KABC at this point. But if people are not sampling the dial, I will tell you both that as I am in the evening on the East Coast, reading in and getting ready to host my own daily radio program the following day, I'm there and I've got the clicker in my hand. I'm looking online, but I don't go to bed without trying to hear what Rachel Maddow's opening commentary might be, what exactly Sean Hannity has to say, and of course what Chris Cuomo is offering.
Yeah.
And if I'm not going between all three, I don't feel like I'm getting the story that I need to present the following day.
There needs to be more people like you. The general public has to think that way, but apparently they don't. We have to take a quick break. And I forgot to say when I was introducing Michael that he's also a comedian. He comes up with these zingers about KABC Radio, which we have to pay for the show. He's at Smirconish. That's his Twitter feed. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Carrie, bopping your head.
Yeah, Wayman's on it right now.
You like Yes?
Well, I like Yes, and I like Zed and whoever that was with Meet Me in the Middle when you went out with it. That was such a good song.
Yeah, Meet Me in the Middle. They actually played at the Heritage Classic in Regina, Saskatchewan.
Who, Yes?
No, the Zed? For Meet Me in the Middle.
What? Are you kidding?
Let's ask Michael Smirconish. We're talking to Michael Smirconish. If you haven't listened to his show, because sometimes you can't hear KABC all over the country, but you can hear Sirius 124, Politics of the United States, Michael Smirconish in the morning. And if you're in L.A., listen to him on your way to work. It's a great drive time radio. Michael, we just played Yes. What does Yes mean to you? It's just not a fluke.
Oh, man. I think it's kind of a Philly thing. We had a really big progressive rock movement in the 70s when I was growing up and into the early 80s. And Yes was at the forefront of that. I can remember being on radio years ago and trying to launch an effort to make sure that they were accepted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I was unsuccessful then, although they have recently gained admission. But I was able to get the Philadelphia mayor to proclaim a particular day, Yes Day, in the city of Philadelphia. And I think what you're getting at, Alan, you probably know that that night I ended up hosting the band in my backyard. Think about that, growing up and idolizing a rock band and then having them all in your backyard on a particular evening. It was great.
That's a story.
He had a barbecue. Now, did someone cook for them or did you cater it? Like, what do you do when you have Yes in your backyard?
Well, I can tell you what you don't do, because I made a very rookie mistake. The question really is, what music do you play when you when you're hosting Yes? And the answer is not Yes.
Played them. Except for Mariah Carey. Every time she does a photo shoot, she plays herself.
You know, it's so funny because last week or 2 weeks ago when we had Molly Bloom on, the poker princess, and she said her first time when she was hosting the poker game, she didn't know what to do, so she played The Gambler.
She played all gambling songs.
No, The Gambler. And Tobey Maguire and DiCaprio and all of these people looked at her and saying, like, why are you playing gambling songs for a poker match? So that's a rookie mistake, but I'm sure you had a great time hosting them. I mean, it's a dream come true for a lot of people. And I have to ask you, because for your book, Clowns to the Left of Me, Jokers to the Right, American Life in Columns, did you ever write a column about Yes and about that experience?
I don't know that I did, now that you mention it, because the book is a collection of what I regarded as 100 of the more memorable columns from 1,047 that I wrote over a 15-year time period. And if I wrote one about that night, it didn't make the cut. It was very hard for me to go through more than 1,000 and decide, okay, which 100 do I want to republish? And most importantly, do I want to comment on and say, okay, this was the opinion that I offered then, what would I say today? That was part of the fun of it for me. So the columns tended to be more on the heavy side.
You know, I was looking at a review of the book, and it said, though I don't always agree with Michael's position on an issue, he always opens my eyes to another way of thinking. I would recommend this book to anyone who's tired of all of the hate and tension in our country. It is a breath of fresh air.
That would be most of social media.
I don't know. Michael, is that everyone, or are people just a bunch of fakers and they really aren't looking for this breath of fresh air?
Well, look, I think to Carrie's point, it's a vicious social media environment. I travel the country now, largely given my work with CNN, but in support of this book, I have been doing a tour of sorts. As a matter of fact, I was at the Paley Center in Los Angeles very early on, that I call American Life in Columns. And when I'm traveling, because of the television work that I do, there's more of a recognition factor than I ever had before. Knock on wood, I have never had an unpleasant personal encounter. And yet, if you were to go on my Twitter feed, and I don't recommend it, but if you were to go on any of my social media, you know, tonight, you would see the most obnoxious and vicious statements. And what I find is that when you can't see someone's face, you know, when you don't know the identity of the person who's saying these things, everybody seems to get beer muscles and take on a persona and act in a way that they would never act if you could see their face.
And that needs to change in for everything. You know, that really does need to change. I know, but
people,
does need to.
He gave such a great tease. You've got to go to @smerconish, S-M-E-R-C-O-N-I-S-H, and find out what he's talking about, because there are so many people, and let's just call them clowns and jokers, that want to use this platform to say what they wouldn't say to your face. I have to ask you, Michael, because you talk about clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. What moment was it when someone came to you and said, that's a perfect theme song for your show?
I don't know if there were a light bulb, if there were an epiphany moment. I think it was born of frustration in that in my CNN work, people have become so preconditioned that they're about to get something that's entirely from the left or entirely from the right. And then I come along and, you know, one segment you may leave thinking this guy is a conservative. You might in the next segment think, wow, what a lefty he might be. And by the end of the program, I seem to have upset everybody. They're so accepting of the fact that a radio host or a television personality has to be one or the other. But here's the thing. I don't meet people who see the world entirely through left or right wing lenses unless they are radio hosts or television personalities, because when I'm leading my real life, I interact with people who see life as a mixed bag. They tend to be conservative on fiscal issues, more liberal on social issues, and yet they're not represented in the media, and they need to be.
You know, I think Holland Cook, a Rhode Island radio consultant, may have said it best about you when he said, what limits him is that he's reasonable. Michael really wants to get to the heart of the matter.
And that's
Alan,
limiting.
I can remember a radio consultant early in my career telling me I would never get anywhere unless I hung up on at least two people per hour. And my response was to say, well, geez, how will I know who those people are? But that's the mindset of incivility, you know, ruling the airwaves. I just don't want to be a part of it. Frankly, at this point, I don't need to be a part of that. And it's so liberating to just do the kind of a show that I wish to do.
You know, going back to your remark about meeting people that really aren't, you know, so far left and so far right, unless they're a radio host. Have you been to California?
I think that's a rhetorical question.
Oh.
I mean, literally. I mean, some of the people here that I talk to, you can't be more left and unable to
dogmatic,
see.
Dogmatic, I think
so
the term
dogmatic.
Is.
So dogmatic. And it's frustrating. And even if you're talking reason and sense, they will not listen because of the hatred of the president, you know, who's sitting in office right now. There's just no sense, no common sense. Everything has been wiped from them.
Well, that's a sad commentary. I don't deny that some of those folks are among us, but I refuse to believe that they are the majority of what's out there. I Carrie, call me crazy. I still think that there's more that unites us than divides us. I think that we've been led astray largely by media influence. Morris Fiorina at Stanford, a little bit north of where you guys are, wrote a great book called Unstable Majorities 2 years ago, documenting that there really has not been a sea change among voters on the issues in the last 30 years. It's become more personal, but we really haven't changed our positions. What has changed, the political leadership and the media. And I believe that. I'm a firm believer that they're still more in common than divisive among Americans.
Speaking of which, Michael, we only have a few more minutes. A year away from the election, you talk about divisive, you talk about leaders. Let's talk quickly about Trump. Now, I know he's been a disappointment for you, as you've said, and he hasn't been an independent thinker. What is your prognosis? Look into the crystal ball while we have you here. Tell us what's going to happen over the next year.
You would want to vote or wager against whatever I would tell you, because I'm embarrassed. I feel like I should have seen the Trump train coming, but I didn't. I think I understand exactly how it all happened, but I did not call it out. That's for sure. I don't think that impeachment, unless something earth-shattering materializes that we're unaware of at this stage, takes him out of office. I think he'll be impeached by the House, exonerated or at least found not guilty by the Senate. I do believe that he will be the Republican candidate. And I think that the Democratic side is a crapshoot that could go all the way to the convention because of the proportionate way in which they nominate their candidates. Throw in Bloomberg, not until Super Tuesday. I just don't think there'll be any clarity on that side for quite some time. I don't know who the nominee will be. Elizabeth Warren is the most ascendant at this point. If I'm Donald Trump, frankly, she's the one I want to run against.
Will people be reluctant to vote for someone who, based on the stock market and the economy now, may pose a threat to all the gains and how the economy has flourished?
Hey, Donald Trump is going to have a litany of things for which he can take credit. especially among conservatives, and not the least of which will be two Supreme Court justices, where he said what he was going to do, and he did it. And if the economy remains robust, it is very hard to dislodge an incumbent. So I thought that the most interesting development in the last week, data supplied by the New York Times and Siena that showed you what's going on in the battleground. Forget these national polls. They are meaningless. In the battleground states right now, it's a horse race. That's the best that you can say.
Elizabeth Warren said this. She said, thank you, black women, for black trans and cis women, gender nonconforming and non-binary people are the backbone of our democracy. And I don't take this endorsement lightly. How can you say that seriously? Now, I'm not saying that these people are not people, but the backbone? What about the rest of the I'm so confused that these people are now the backbone of our democracy.
All I can say to that, Carrie, is this. I have been present for a couple of the debates. I've watched all of the debates, but those for which I've been in the hall, the Democratic debates. I was just in Columbus, Ohio. Before that, I was in Detroit, Michigan, you know, sitting in a great spot where I could take in the whole scene. There were any number of times when something was said by one of the candidates that brought the House down. It really played well among the Democratic donors and intelligentsia. And I sat there sort of scratching my head, looking around and saying, I don't think that's a message that's going to sell in middle America.
No.
You know, that which it takes, like you've just referenced, to get the nomination. That probably is a great thing to say when you're trying to win the Democratic nomination, but not a general election.
But how many people, you know, that are in that group that are going to vote for her? It's not going to put her, you think, over the top. What about the people? Why isn't she catering to the people who have been Democrats and who've been fighting this fight for so long? I'm just confused at why now they're the backbone of society or the backbone of it.
I get your point. I can just say that passion rules in primary season, but not in general elections.
There you have it. The reasonableness of Michael Smirkanish, who once was, they said about him, the one constant about Michael Smirkanish is that you never know where he's going to pop up next. We are so happy that you popped up right here on Gurfy's Law, Michael.
You're awfully nice. Thank you for hosting me.
You know, people have to listen to your show. It's on POTUS, Channel 124, Sirius XM, and CNN on Saturday morning. Listen to Michael Smirkanish or go to @Smirkanish, even though he says, do it at your own risk. Michael, thank you so much for being with
us
tonight.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.
Have a nice night in SoCal.
We will, and you in Philly. Well, that's going to do it for the Michael Smirkanish show today. We have Bill Baker coming up. Bill Baker is, he just wrote a book called Organizations for People, and we're going to talk to him after the break. You're listening to Gurvey's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Yeah, we're back. We've gone from the middle to the Sultans of Swing. That was pretty exciting with Michael Smirkanish.
He's awesome.
You got him revved up.
Yeah, no, I think he's great. I like that he really talks sense on both sides. I do.
There it's like you.
There shouldn't be both sides, but yeah, there should be all sides, and I agree with him.
And he stayed so calm, even though you were really getting upset.
At what? At Elizabeth Warren's ridiculous remarks?
Well, a lot of people support Elizabeth Warren, so
yeah, but that's like, where she should have gone. Is thank you to all the people who support me. You are the backbone of this democracy, not to a small group of people who people don't really, you know, understand or
maybe
identify.
Maybe you misunderstood
with.
I don't
think so.
No,
it's pretty clear.
Well, that's why a lot of people listen to Michael Smirkanish, because he's trying to be reasonable. He's trying to be in the middle. He's trying to evaluate things without emotion. And he has an amazing resume. Speaking of amazing resumes, our next guest has an amazing resume. I mean, talk about someone who's the director of the Bernard L. Schwartz Center for Media, Public Policy, and Education at Fordham University, distinguished professor of media and entertainment at IESE Business School in Barcelona, Spain, president emeritus of WNET 13, the New York Public Television Station. And he taught business class at Juilliard, hosts a podcast called Belief, and he importantly helped launch Oprah Winfrey as a talk show host and helped launch the Discovery Channel and the Disney Channel. Bill Baker. Wow, what a resume. Welcome to Gervie's Law.
And some of it's even true.
Wow. 50%. I'd say 100% is true.
Yeah, about 50%.
No. Yeah. It gives you...
Let's put it this way. I was there when all those things happened. And I've been around a long time.
And you didn't even say you were...
Good to be on this program. And
it's nice to have
you. It was fun listening to the promos and even the commercials.
It's okay. Good. I'm glad someone's listening to the commercials.
We had the good weather here on the East Coast that you guys have.
Yeah, we've heard it's been bad. We just talked to Michael Smirkanish in Philly, and he was saying that... he was hoping for a trip to see his son out. Everyone's got a kid like in LA that they want to come and see to get the warm weather.
The weather has been brilliant out here. It's
Bill,
wonderful.
You never even said that we missed the 7 Emmys that you've won.
Yes, and we have a film in production right now that is a big public television documentary about what it's like to be old. And we put young people through the experience of aging, so it's not a depressing film. And I was reading with some real interest of Carrie's interest in the subject. And I thought, wow, Carrie, you'll have to be part of this. The film is called Fast Forward, where we take people in their 30s and 40s and we have them experience the what it's like to be 80 and ask the question later, if you knew today what you'll know when you're 80, would you do anything differently? And of course the answer is you certainly would. That's the story.
What an amazing concept.
I know, Carrie, you're an expert at a lot of this
because you
work in that field.
I do, and we had something at my last conference where they put people through what it was like to have Alzheimer's, and it was one of the most sad experiences that I've ever, like any kind of dementia. These people are amazing, and they put you through this experience. When you come out, you have so much more compassion for people who are going through that. This sounds like a film I would definitely watch.
You should be in it.
I will be
involved, and we'll have some screenings of the film certainly in Los Angeles.
I would love that.
We'll get you involved. So make sure that we know all of your connections. But at any rate,
when do you think it will be coming out? Because we'd love to have you on the show if you're in town.
It'll be toward the end of next year. We're trying actually. It'll be on PBS, and we're trying actually to. But we're going to have screenings, many screenings all across the country up until then. And we're trying to really avoid the election because everybody's going to be so distracted. We don't want this thing to be on the air November 1st or something.
Yeah, right.
You know, although it is apropos because if you end up with a Biden-Trump that are in the election, you might want to know what it's like to be Biden or Trump at 80 years old.
Right.
It sounds fascinating.
All this, right?
It sounds fascinating. We don't want to go there. I want to talk about organizations for people, caring cultures, basic needs, and better lives. What a great idea for a book. And the book is really spectacular. Tell us how you got involved. You have so many interests, and this one, I'm sure, was near and dear to your heart.
Well, it certainly is, and I, as you mentioned already, I've run a lot of businesses over the years. So, all the businesses I've run have been in the media world. But my academic background was organizational behavior, industrial psychology. 10 years ago, a colleague of mine, Michael O'Malley, who's the author of this book with me, who is a working industrial psychologist, wrote a book called Leading with Kindness. I got so tired of all of the praise of killer bosses and these very tough, and it's even gotten worse right now, you know, with the whole world kind of a tough man mentality, management style. And what we tried to show with Leading with Kindness, we went back and did all the research, all the organizational behavior and industrial psychological research on the subject, and there's lots and lots of it. And basically all of it says treating people kindly, treating people well, is the only way in the long term to get the job done. So it's not just you make people feel good. the companies all succeed better if you manage people that way. For some reason, the media never caught on because I guess being, you know, a killer boss looks good on TV, but it really doesn't work in the long term. Now, scaring people to death and being an evil person is in sometimes kind of interesting showbiz, but it's really not the way to manage anybody. And we've proven that with all of the industrial psychological research. We did another book on management about 5 years ago, and then this one is kind of our culmination, Organizations for People, and it's published, by the way, by a California organization called Stanford University. I know you've heard of them.
Heard of it.
And Stanford, which pleased us very much because they have such an incredible reputation, that they wanted to get behind this subject and publish this book. And we studied corporations all over America, but concentrated on 21 of them. About six are from Los Angeles, or are from California, and we showed that you can be phenomenally successful and treat people with great respect, with kindness, even love, and get so much more out of them, and also have phenomenally profitable businesses. So that's what this book is about. We try to prove that point. I think we do a pretty good job of doing that. In a time when 36% of the employees in America say they have dysfunctional managers, and 75% of the workers say that their boss is the most stressful part of their job. Even in this time of low unemployment. Yes, I'm sorry, Carrie.
Oh, no, sorry. Sorry to interrupt you, but I think, you know, that show Undercover Boss really did prove that the people who felt that they were taken care of or that they had been there for 20, 30 years,
but, you know, Carrie,
it was because of the good boss.
That's television, though, and you can't get duped by television.
It's true, I might add.
What they did, what Bill and Michael did on this book is they examined practices of 21 companies, termed best companies to work for or one of the best. And that's where they looked at reality versus television.
I agree. There is a lot of non-reality in reality shows, but there were some, I love that show, by the way, that showed that. And there's another, I went to a business conference with, and this guy spoke, his name was Cameron Harold. And he was talking this about the same thing you were. I don't know if he's written a book about it, but that he would help like Google and certain things. And he'd say that the companies that treated their employees well and with respect and gave them more time off, which is amazing. He has a few companies and they have to take 4 weeks off a year. They have to.
We have to take a couple of minutes off a show. Because we have to take a break. Carrie, we're going to pick up on what you're saying. We're talking to Bill Baker, co-author of Organizations for People, and you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, and we're back. We're talking to Bill Baker. The book is called Organizations for People, Caring Cultures, Basic Needs, and Better Lives. Bill, do you really believe that it's within the management's, it's in their wheelhouse to be able to focus on bettering employees' lives versus just trying to profit off of employees?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I can tell you that we know many, many companies, many, many managers who will always put their people first. And as a matter of fact, the Harvard Business Review wrote an important article saying really high quality companies put their people right at the same level as profits. And you almost never go wrong doing that. You never go wrong doing that. And there are examples in our book. There was one example that was rather touching when a person was out on a boating. I think it may have been in the Caribbean, was out on a boat. And something went haywire, and he got lost, and his wife, the first call she made was to her husband's boss, because she trusted him so much, and she knew how much the boss would do anything for this employee. The boss, well, after he called 911, jumped in his own private plane and started looking for this guy and finally found him on a deserted island someplace.
I was going to say, I mean, did he jump in his helicopter and start looking for him?
You know,
he did.
One of the things that I see way too much is working in workers' compensation, when we, I have a lot of death cases where people die on the job, unfortunately. And I just went to the hospital. A guy just died, unfortunately. Aww. But we see the employers only showing an interest because they're afraid. They're afraid of their insurance rates going up. So they pretend like they care. But the wife of the guy who died was told by his boss, don't get an attorney. We'll take care of it. And what he was going to do for her was far below what the law allows for a death case like this. So you got to wonder, when profits and fear of insurance rates going higher is really what is motivating employers when they speak to the employees or the families of employees.
Well, Alan, I can tell you our goal, one of our goals in this book, is to put you out of business.
Yeah, I would love that. I would love it.
Is because if more bosses really cared, and you know probably better than anybody, there are a lot of really, really bad bosses and really, really bad companies out there. But what we're trying to show is there are many phenomenally good bosses and companies. And in those companies, things of the kind that you're talking about just do not happen, because they care about the people first. And if you care about the people first, you'll never go wrong. You'll just never go wrong. And because the people will work so hard for you.
Right.
And it's also needs not only of the individual employee, but many of these companies think about the family, about the families of the employees, you know, because when you come to work, you're not just coming into work, you're part of a bigger family system. So many of these really fine, exemplary companies do everything they can to help the family. Invite the family in to have, you know, we highlight one of our companies is Patagonia, and gee, what they do at Patagonia is pretty unbelievable for
Tell
their
us.
Employees.
Tell us.
Even things like if you're arrested for civil disobedience, the company helps pay for the lawyer to defend you.
Wow.
I mean, things like that. I mean, above and beyond, we have an example of a woman who worked there who took care of sick birds at her desk and had the company and other employees helping her while she was doing her job. Another place, by the way, that and a good person for you to talk to, a person that did the foreword of our book, is there in Los Angeles with you. Her name is Rachel Moore. Rachel Moore is a former ballet dancer and incredible individual. Broke her ankle when she was 25 years old. She's out of business as a ballet dancer. Had no education. Went to Brown University, I think, on a scholarship.
My alma mater. Anyone who went to Brown University has got to be a good kid.
Either Columbia or Stanford or someplace. And now she is the head of the Music Center of Los Angeles, one of the finest executives in America, 2,000 employees. And the way she manages is it's people first. And with her own managers, it's not only did you do your job, but how did you accomplish it? This woman, Rachel Moore, is an exemplar.
We've got to get her on the show, not only because she went to Brown University,
sure.
But what a stellar example that people need to listen to find out how she does it. And there's so many examples that you give in organizations for people. And, you know, it's nice to see that there are people who care, because we often see, especially in my line of work, people who don't care. People get lawyers because people don't care.
But there are many, many companies where people really do care. And it's not only American companies, but companies all over the world. When I wrote the first book of our series, Leading with Kindness, I was living in Germany for a short time, and I was shocked at how many of the German companies, which are the finest in the world in this kind of middle, small company category, they cared more about their people than their business. It was just very touching and powerful. But this book of ours, Organizations for People, has been a real joy to kind of put out there, and that we were grateful for Stanford University Press to get behind us, to tell the story that everything you see on TV isn't accurate.
Bill, tell everyone how they can get the book, Organizations for People.
It's available, in all the usual ways, obviously in bookstores, but it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the usual places you can get books published by Stanford University Press.
Thank you for doing this, and thank you for creating this awareness, because it is so important.
We love the positive sentiments that you're bringing forth, and there's just so much negativity. We talked about that with Michael Smirkanish before, all the negativity in this world, and both you and Michael are bringing some positiveness for people to really grasp onto, and that's a wonderful thing.
Common sense is rare these days.
And listen, with all of the stuff that you've done, Bill, your voice is amazing. You should be in radio.
Yes. I actually know Carrie's dad.
We have got to talk, and we'll definitely talk about your film.
You guys have a lot in common.
Fantastic, yeah.
We want to thank you, Bill thank you, Bill Baker,
for
being on Gervie's Law.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure. Well, that's going to do it today, Carrie.
Yes.
You had a good time,
I can tell.
This
is a great show.
It really was, and I will tell you something, that you've made two good friends today.
I'm very excited.
Michael Smirkanish and Bill Baker.
Yay. You know, my conference is coming up. Maybe we can show the film there.
That would be great.
You should.
It's not
I'm
ready.
All for it. Yeah, we can do that.
Let's do it.
It's going to be. We'll do it at the conference. Thanks for listening to Gervie's Law. We'll be here again next week, same time, same channel.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.